We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, Dan Rubenstein. Still far across the country, way over there in sunny Southern California. Sir, how you doing? Happy 4th of July.
Hey, happy 4th of July to you too. And I've decided something important, Ty, that I think is going to change the complexion and future of this show entirely.
Just executive decision style.
Every episode an RPG. I want every bit of information, every cue on a Q&A, every game preview, every game recap, every interview, every coach interview, any sort of show that we ever record on here, on video cameras, on whatever, Instagram. Follow our Instagram, Solid Verbal. It's all RPG. That's my sweet spot, I think.
I hate to say it, but it may have to be, Dan, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
We've got one major breaking news story that okay. I think we're going to discuss here. I don't know if we've got much else beyond that, because it sort of feels like the kind of thing that we could take some time discussing. And I know we will. It pertains to COVID-19. It pertains to USC. And yeah, there could be some ramifications as it relates to college football. But we'll get into that. We're also going to get into your questions. So you put a call out on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Reddit. We had questions coming in from all of our channels. It is the start of a new month now. It is July. Many of you will be listening to this show, hopefully wearing a mask, at some picnic, enjoying the 4th of July holiday weekend. I don't know if you've got any plans. I don't. The weekends are sort of a challenge because I don't really know what to do, given where we're at right now. But nonetheless, it's good to be off of the mysterious day job and enjoying some of the summer sun out there. So wherever we find you, wherever you're listening to the show, we hope you're doing well. We hope you're safe. We hope you're happy. And thank you so much for downloading the show, as ever.
Would you like to talk about very specific college football things and hot dogs immediately after discussing a news item or two?
I would be fine with that, if you're okay with
it. Yeah, let's just get into it, Ty. Let's just do it.
Let's just rip the Band-Aid right off. Breaking news!
Remember when your voice really went out? Like, you were really having serious throat issues?
It was after we recorded the history of the Solid Verbal episode like 3 years ago.
Yeah. I wonder, is breaking news the hardest, is the most taxing thing on your throat?
It probably would be, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure, because you really sound great. And I'd like to talk about the news now.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I read to you a tweet here just in. USC reverses course and announces that its undergrads will primarily take online classes this fall. This development obviously casts doubt on the fate of the Trojans' 2020 college football season. Keely Ure, I believe is how you say that name.
I mean, we can run through the possibilities. It's almost assuredly Keely, but it's E-U-R-E. Ure?
Ure? I'm gonna go with Ure.
Ure, okay.
Nonetheless.
Let's discuss the meat of the story, yeah.
This is sort of a big deal. She is right to point out that it does cast some doubt on the fate of the 2020 Trojans season. We had heard rumblings about some schools in California maybe moving to online-only classes in the fall.
The Cal States, yeah.
Yeah, in light of the coronavirus. And so it doesn't come as any great surprise, but it certainly does not lend much credence to the fact that we're going to have any kind of normal college football season. Maybe that much was assumed. Maybe we were overly optimistic a few weeks ago when it seemed things were trending in a good direction, but a lot's changed in a very short period of time. We've seen cases spike in a number of really big states, football-crazed states. No state's been immune, but this has definitely been something that we've been paying a very watchful eye to over the course of the last 2 weeks or so. The wave of pessimism is not going to get any smaller now with this news.
I think I'm really starting to arrive at your side of things, where to expect anything less than an a la carte season, an a la carte fall, where perhaps, and I know we talked about a little of this on the RPG show, where man, we'll have five teams from this conference, five teams from that conference, seven teams from this conference, and maybe all schedules are thrown away and a new sort of season outlook becomes a reality of, okay, these 43 teams are going to be playing 8 or 9 games each, and this is how it's going to be done. I hesitate to think that that will be fun for anybody and that's actually going to be a good look for anybody. But the more we see things, big football states that contain a number of Power 5 schools, California is not in a great place right now. The governor of California, Gavin Newsom, just shut down bars and restaurants in a number of places. Schools are taking, it seems, every single college, that is, every single attempt and every single opportunity to be safe and perhaps take no chances with public health. So it's hard to see the Michael Scott snip, snap, snip, snap. USC is not having in-person classes. USC is having in-person classes. I don't think USC is playing football this fall, right?
It seems foolish to assume otherwise.
Yeah.
With this news. And by the way, you want to talk about a domino effect or a cascading effect here. USC was set to open up its college football season on September the 5th against Alabama in the great state of Texas.
Right.
So not a lot of great news.
You currently can't go to, well, I think, New York from California without quarantining for 2 weeks. Now, I imagine Texas, just because they've been a lot more lax to their detriment with public health and the virus, 2 weeks from California and USC is just going to start traveling around, even with their campus not existing in person? I don't know. It's hard to see, Ty.
This is no doubt something we're going to have to pay close attention to. You know, we've been trying to cover news at the top of every show. This one felt really significant. We talked about Arizona pausing their reentry plan on the last show, but USC now moving to more of an online capacity for the fall semester. There's going to be some ramifications here, and we'll be with you again next Wednesday morning to talk through whatever should develop over the holiday weekend in the early part of next week. But keep your eyes peeled on this one. This is significant.
Yeah, Pac-12 states, just not in a good place at all. Oregon, Washington, California, Arizona in particular. But the South is not in a good place. The Midwest and Northeast are in good places. And if you remember, Ty, I think it was the Pac-12 canceling their basketball tournaments. That was sort of the first real wave, right? So I don't think the Pac-12 is going to be a leader in pushing through a football season. I imagine the Pac-12 is going to be a signifier of where Power Five conferences stand or don't stand. They're going to sort of set the pace.
I think the sooner the powers that be throw out the entire rule book here, throw out the entire structure, and the sooner they are willing to accept that this is going to be cobbled together, perhaps week to week, that's the only way this thing is going to go off.
You're a spring season guy now, right?
I would love a spring season. I think it would be fun from a fan's perspective. It would be hell. I know Sandy Barber from Penn State gave some comments to maybe it was CBS. I forget where.
Right.
And she talked about how, look, if it's a last ditch resort, if it's the only thing we can get, something is better than nothing. But it's not optimal because there are logistical problems that go along with that. I think it would be interesting from a fan's perspective, to say the least. But I do think there would be an interest level, particularly among our Verballers. I would love to hear from people to get their thoughts on this. If people just said, you know what, we're throwing out the rule books. We're going to do flex scheduling. We're going to try and figure this thing out. Month to month chunks. Maybe we're not going to have a postseason in the manner that we're used to, but maybe we play our postseason from week to week. I don't know. That to me would be interesting from a fan's perspective as well. So we'll just have to see what comes of this. A long way to go between now and September.
They're also throwing out the rule books in that no offensive pass interference.
Correct.
Pretty good.
Let's do it. I'm
offsides,
ready.
We're not calling it anymore. 12 men on the field, case by case situation. That would be fun too.
You ready to talk about July 4th and hot dogs and all that stuff?
And football, yeah, of course.
And football.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail
on the Solid Verbal.
Dan, as often as we can, and truly now in the off season, we do our best to pay homage to those of you who write into solidverbal@gmail.com, to those of you who post on Reddit, on Facebook, on Twitter, and most recently on Instagram. We've found that Instagram is a fertile crescent of really good college football and non-college football questions. Is that right?
Yes, that has been my experience. That has been overwhelming. So, yeah.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I will turn it over to you, sir. You get to pick from the hat the first few questions that we got come through on all these social media channels.
All right, we're going to get to the 4th of July questions, and we will let you know when we're done with college football questions. If you're only here to listen to college football, that's rad. That's cool. We will let you know when we are officially done with college football questions, though I do want to throw out a tease, Ty. Because David on Instagram asked maybe my favorite question we've ever been asked. How many hot dogs should I eat?
Wow.
How many hot dogs should I eat? We'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that.
I might have to spend some time thinking about that one. Okay.
With only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words. There's a lot there. Okay. We were just talking about USC. Let's assume the best. Let's assume glass half full or all the way full. Kenneth wants to know, does USC keep it, quote, close? He defines that as fewer than 3 touchdowns against Alabama. And Ty, I will rephrase this question to say, if they played 10 times, how many times, if we are presuming Alabama is superior in some way, how many times does USC keep this game competitive with a really promising quarterback in Keaton Slovis, talent on both sides of the ball, but a new defensive coordinator and some new assistants?
They play them
out of 10.
First game of the year, right?
Correct. Yeah. Neutral site, North Texas.
Neutral site. I'm going to say 3 or 4 out of 10.
Okay.
If memory serves, Alabama's in a position where they're going to have to rebuild a chunk of their defense, especially the secondary. And we know that this is an offense under Graham Harrell and Keaton Slovis. And with all the weapons that USC has out wide, they're going to attack through the air. I have a lot of faith that Nick Saban can build up that secondary over the course of a season. That's what he does really well, how he's made much of his own acclaim. But
this is game one.
This is game one. There yeah. will be some growing pains. I'm sure Saban would be the first to admit that. And look, 3 touchdowns is a lot. I think we're used to Alabama blowing teams out. And so maybe it doesn't feel like that big a margin when they're involved. But no, 3, 4 out of 10. Maybe that's still not great, but it's better than 0.
We saw USC against pretty good teams last year. Wasn't that good? They got sort of run out of their own stadium by Oregon. The bowl game against Iowa was ugly. Now, are bowl games indicative? No, they're not necessarily indicative. But we've seen USC get run out of stadiums by decent teams recently with Keaton Slovis there, who I think is good. 3 touchdowns, Mac Jones, Najee Harris, still Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith. Yeah, I think it's 2 or 3 out of 10, especially with a new defensive coordinator. So we assume USC's defensive look is going to be pretty simple without a lot of time to get things organized, to get the verbiage down. That's a tough ask to go into week one in a huge stadium like that, even if it's empty. It's still daunting, I think. So I think they keep it close in a weird circumstance, turnovers, onside kicks, injuries, whatever. But to count on that seems like a lot. So, I have Alabama comfortably in this game. So, I'm going to say no.
Okay. I think we generally agree, though.
Agree.
2 to 4.
Yeah.
Where are we going next?
Kyle wants to know. Les Miles, question mark. Thoughts, question mark.
He's fun. He's a fun guy.
Yeah. Wish you were recruiting at a better clip. Right now, they are sort of on the 9-10 area in terms of average talent per the 24/7 composite right there with Iowa State, who has a coach who has proven he can get the most out of his players without the most talent, who's also recruited pretty well. Les Miles hasn't done that. They'll have a new quarterback this year. I like their offensive coordinator and the switch they made last year, but it's hard to see much to believe in right now with Kansas. Happy to be wrong. Happy to think maybe he's a Mac Brown type who finds second life. But North Carolina was in a lot better a place. They were a lot more competitive when Mac joined. It's hard to see anything better than a 4-8, 5-7 type ceiling for Kansas at any point in his tenure.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. But I'll harken back to what happened last season, and Kansas was better than they were the previous year. They were pluckier, sure, as I like to say. I'm looking over what they did. There were some close losses on the schedule. I'm not going to pretend like West Virginia was any kind of Goliath, but
right,
to lose by 5 to West Virginia, that's an improvement. Given
West Virginia
where Kansas
was full-on bad last year.
Yeah, it's still an improvement for Kansas, Dan.
Okay.
How about on the road at Texas, losing by 2? Not going to pretend Texas was a national championship contender, but 50-48.
Yeah, they made the coordinator change. Yeah, they made the coordinator change. It was a brand new offense that Texas hadn't seen with a bunch of injuries on the Texas side, not making an excuse. But you also look at what Kansas did against Baylor, right?
61-6. That's a problem. It is a problem. Right. I'm trying to highlight the happy moments here. Even at Iowa State, that was a 10-point game. They put up some points. I feel like Kansas was better last year, certainly, than they were in 2018. And that says something about Les Miles. He came in.
Okay.
He got them playing harder. We'll see what he can do next. That will be the operative question, if there is a next in 2020. And I don't know. They were at least more interesting last year, and that stands for something in my book.
I think I'm always going to prefer my bottom tier Power 5 team to hire an up-and-comer. And I don't like the come down or taking a job just because he misses coaching type hire. What Jonathan Smith is doing at Oregon State seems to be the path forward. And Oregon State really hit some lows not as they didn't hang around the bottom of the Pac-12 like Kansas hung around the bottom of the Big 12. But I think that's is really hitting on transfers, really making yourself attractive to major program transfers like Oregon State did, and having the coach who's willing to sort of create something that he has been imagining forever and putting it into action, whereas Les Miles has done it and just it feels like he just wants to coach again and be re-energized as a coach. I think the ceiling is lower.
All right, where are we going next?
Let's go to Ross. He says, as a Georgia fan, I understand it's hard to be unbiased.
No.
No. But I really can't see why everyone is hyping up Florida this year. Mullen doesn't have any impressive wins on his resume yet. Neither of you have a hat in the ring, so what are your thoughts? Ty, what say you about Florida optimism? Well-deserved, undeserved?
I really like Florida this year.
Walk me through it.
I really like Florida this year. So, you know, something that we had a lot of fun with was Calm Throw Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
Calm Throw Kyle Trask. We had another question on this list, and maybe we'll get to it, asking about top quarterbacks in the SEC.
Yeah.
What Dan Mullen did with Kyle Trask could very well make him the answer to that question. He could be.
Okay.
He could. You can make a case that Kyle Trask is the best returning quarterback in the SEC.
I'll make it right now. He is.
Yeah, he is. He had a really good season. It was incrementally better throughout the course of the year, but Dan Mullen did a great job with him. Dan Mullen's calling card is his offense. I think before long, he will have that offense tuned up. That has really been the Achilles heel for the Gators over the last couple seasons. Notably, the defense is still really good, really sound. You add an offensive component to that, it makes Florida a really tough out. Really tough out. I looked at the schedule a couple weeks ago. I don't have it in front of me now, but I remember looking through it and saying 10-2 feels like this is about where this team's going to finish. I could definitely see them doing better. So I am very bullish on Mullen at Florida with the talent that he is assembling down there, the offense that I think he's going to build. It's to me, it's a matter of when, not if, Florida takes that next step.
Maybe it's Curate Throw Kyle instead of Calm Throw Kyle, because that's what he is. That's what he was. And it's the combination. I'll probably say this seven times this show. Combination quarterback and defense. And while Florida does lose important pieces on all three levels, Jonathan Greenard, who got after quarterbacks, Louisville transfer, CJ Henderson in the secondary, they've recruited well enough. They've put together top 10 classes that they're going to hit on some of these underclassmen blue chip dudes. I'm curious about the guys other than Kyle Pitts, you know, if they can figure out a way to get Kadarius Toney the ball in creative ways, and if he can sort of take the next step as a dangerous player with the ball in his hands. But the fact remains, Kyle Trask is accurate, he's consistent, and there's enough talent there. And they couldn't really run the ball at all last year.
That was
the line wasn't a really good run blocking line. And so if they're at all better, I know they have the five-star Miami transfer, Lorenzo Lingard. If they can get something out of him and the other backs in that room and actually be able to utilize play action consistently, it becomes a more dangerous team. Right now, here, I will forward the question to you, Ty. Who would you rather have, the combination of JT Daniels and Jamie Newman or Kyle Trask?
Wow.
Because we got into JT Daniels and Georgia quarterback question. Who would you rather have as the anchor for your SEC East team with, let's assume, talent relatively the same, even though Georgia is more talented?
Georgia is more talented. And it's a hard question because Georgia is trying to rebuild its offense now as well, trying to retool.
Right.
I guess right now I would take Trask. He's more of a known quantity. We don't know what Jamie Newman, what JT Daniels, assuming he can play this year. We don't know what they're going to look like in that offense. So I think a betting man would have to go Trask.
Yeah. I mean, there's accuracy. He won an Orange Bowl against a pretty good Virginia team. But yeah, I would rather, it's like a count on Kyle. If we're going to keep giving him alliterative nicknames, go with Kyle Trask. So that, I would imagine, is the reason why there is optimism, because Florida is going to hit on recruits. They're going to hit on some underclassmen. The odds are one of their receivers is going to break through. They generally have one receiver in addition to Kyle Pitts. And odds are that the offensive line gets better. So I'm going to go with those reasons as to why Florida should have Gator fans happy and Georgia fans a little bit, at least, uneasy.
Next topic, Dan. Where are we going?
Next topic. We got a couple Washington-Michigan questions because I suppose I asked about potential upsets, August-September games, new quarterback starters, things people seem to like talking about over the summer, provided there's a season. Do you have Washington-Michigan thoughts? Eric wants to know, am I crazy that I think Washington should be the favorite against Michigan? Somebody else asked if Washington-Michigan should be getting more hype as a big non-conference early season game. Do you have early thoughts about narratives, things you're looking for, players, coaches, implications, anything with that game? I believe is happening in Seattle early on.
I mean, the storyline is turnover. The storyline is turnover across the board. Currently, I checked, per FanDuel Sportsbook, Michigan is a 1.5-point favorite.
Okay.
Eric's question specifically was, should Washington be the favorite? I think you can make that case. I know that both are in the extreme bottom half of returning production. Mm-hmm. So what that means, according to our friend Bill Connolly, offensive, there's a lot that needs to be rebuilt on both sides of the football. We also know about the Washington coaching situation with Chris Peterson walking away, Jimmy Lake stepping in. We know that they lost a quarterback. Michigan's in a similar boat. They lost a lot on offense, including a quarterback as well. So that strikes me as the kind of game that's going to be a lot of ground and pound. It's not going to be pretty offensively as both teams try to figure out what they are on offense. If I were a betting man, I would love to take the points there and go Washington, especially given that game being in Seattle. But the second question, should it be getting more hype as a non-conference matchup? That game does not necessarily move me at this juncture. This is before we've done previews, before we've, you know, really even entertained the serious thought of there being a season. But no, that this game does not move the needle for me right now.
You remember the old NBA on NBC commercials where they would highlight the stars and be like, Stockton, Malone, Jordan, Pippen,
right? That one? Yeah.
Of course. And it would be across, you know, any matchup, they could generally find stars. It's the NBA. We get to know these players. If it's Reggie Miller against Patrick Ewing, whatever, you're able to sort of center that. Different sport, for sure. Completely different sport. But when you look at both sides, coaching names, well, on one side, there's a huge one. On the other side, Jimmy Lake is completely unknown, one way or the other. Nobody really has national thoughts about Jimmy Lake. Quarterback is... do you have Joe Milton thoughts, Ty? Do you have Dylan McCaffrey thoughts?
No.
Do you have whoever, Jacob Sermon or Ethan Garbers, or I think it's Kevin Thompson, the Sac State transfer? You don't have any thoughts. And you follow national college football as closely as anybody does. There's not enough star power going in the way that we have with other matchups, with Coach O against Sam Ellinger and Tom Herman. Justin Fields going into Autzen Stadium to take on Oregon, the team that won the Rose Bowl last year. The big non-conference matchups in September, I need some juice, Ty. And when I squeeze the fruit that is Washington, Michigan, I see teams that were, maybe they played against each other in like 1991 in the Rose Bowl, somewhere in there. But I'm not getting a lot of nectar, Ty. I'm not getting a lot of juice. So I hope watching this game gives us some of that, gives us some narrative nutrients. But until we actually watch, these are two teams that, and I looked this up, they're 4-31 in their last 35 games against their big out-of-state rival.
That's the good stuff right there.
They've lost 31 of 35 against Oregon and Ohio State, respectively.
Ooh,
I need something on the flip side for them.
Well, let me go to a question here. These two, I guess, kind of go hand in hand, and it's back to the previous question of Jamie Newman and SEC quarterbacks. And we got one question here: who's the best quarterback in the SEC? We talked about Kyle Trask. I'd be interested in talking about where you rank quarterbacks after Kyle Trask, and that leads into the second question here from Nick, who is asking a very blunt question: is Jamie Newman good enough to lead Georgia to the playoffs or even a national championship? So let's start with the first.
It's like approaching a buffet at an okay casino.
Yeah,
like, sure. Okay, Mashed potatoes versus green beans. I don't know.
If we assume Kyle Trask as one, how would you rank maybe like the next couple? I don't know. Because it really falls off after you get through the top five. I'm interested from a high level just because I think John Rhys Plumlee is entertaining as hell. I don't think he's in the top five. Miles Brennan could be. I'm not going to say he's the next Joe Burrow. I don't truly believe that, but he's a guy we don't know a lot about, came in very highly touted. He's not in my top five at this point, but what's your top four look like if you assume Trask is one?
So the good news is we didn't know Joe Burrow was the next Joe Burrow, right?
Right.
So I'm willing to give Miles Brennan a shot. I'm willing to give KJ Costello in that system at Mississippi State a shot. Mac Jones was very promising with maybe the most around him in terms of receivers nationally last year. Won't have quite as much, but has plenty. After Kyle Trask, I would probably say Mac Jones. And then I really do like good Jarrett Garantano, but I've seen both sides.
Really high.
It's high. Finished the season strong last year.
What about Kellen Mond, baby?
I mean, if you include the full Kellen Mond experience, especially how he's played against better teams later on in the year, excluding last year's game against LSU, there's danger there. There's absolute danger and problematic parts in a good way of Kellen Mond. I'm probably going to have Mac Jones ahead of him just because the reality is he has great receivers. He has Najee Harris. He is set up to succeed in a way that Kellen Mond is not, especially now that looks like there's some NCAA brouhaha in College Station.
I probably go Trask one, Mac Jones two, Kellen Mond three, and then some combination of KJ Costello and Jamie Newman, which leads to the second question from Nick. Is Jamie Newman good enough to lead Georgia to the playoffs or even a national championship? I would qualify this question from Nick by saying that he will not have to win everything on his own.
Right.
They are switching up their offensive system.
Yeah.
I think Jamie Newman is good for that system. He's big, he's mobile, he's got a strong arm. I think they're going to be a little more vertical this year, which it suits his game. But
he was not, I know he got hurt. He missed, I think, the Florida State game last year.
Yeah, right.
Downfield wise, I don't know if that offense really called for it. I watched some Wake Forest last year. A lot of RPO, a lot of short stuff. I think four of his last five games, he annihilated Duke. But four of his last five games, he was full on below average. I worry that Jamie Newman is just an impressive body, but just a guy in terms of leading a team to double-digit wins, and less so than Jake Fromm. That's my concern.
He definitely adds a different dimension
than
what Jake Fromm brought to bear.
Sure.
But under Todd Monken now, it's going to be a bit of a different offense.
With less time to learn.
Less time to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We got another question about whether or not it's going to be Jamie Newman in a battle with JT Daniels, assuming JT Daniels is granted immediate eligibility. We can talk about that one maybe later. But I just, to Nick's point here, I really think the main answer has to be he's not going to have to win everything on his own. Georgia has an incredible pool of talent. He can lean on that supporting cast, and provided he is not a total tire fire, there's a really good chance that he's not going to stand in the way of Georgia getting to, you know, the playoffs or even the national championship. I don't think he will be the reason they don't make it.
I don't know. I'm just, it's a particularly bad year to have a transfer and a new coordinator try to come together to win 11 or 12 games. It's a tough year. Florida, if we're talking about an advantage that Florida has, it is that familiarity between quarterback and system that Georgia just is not going to have.
All right. Where are we going next, Dan? You get the pick.
By the way, he wants to know if Michael Penix can turn Indiana into 9-Windiana. And my answer is probably not. They lost their strength and conditioning staff to Alabama. I do like Penix. And I think I like Penix more than I like Peyton Ramsey.
Do you remember when I got all sorts of giggly talking about Phoenix.
Phoenix, yeah, of course.
That was last year.
Yeah, you really nailed that time. I looked at Indiana's schedule, and 8-4 seems about right. So maybe not 9 Indiana, but 8-4 it's an improvement over last year. I think they can have a winning record in the Big Ten. So I if Michael Penix can stay healthy, sure. I'm big on Indiana.
We need to put together, either on our website or on Instagram or somewhere, mm-hmm. I don't want to say a bingo card, but some sort of listing of all of the little catchphrases we have, like 9 Indiana or drive for 6, those types of things.
What's the route, Standing Room Spartans wants to know, what's the route for Michigan State to get back to playoff contention under Mel Tucker? How realistic is that route?
Playoff contention.
Cart before horse.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Michigan State was 91st in offensive SP plus last year. Going to be a bit of a climb to get back to the Kirk Cousins era.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State. So what is required, Dan? How realistic is it? I think they certainly have to deepen the talent pool. They have to get better quarterback play and just raise their game on offense as a whole. I think that'd be a good place to start. The defense also has been lacking last couple of years. It was better last year, but there have been moments where it certainly wasn't as good as I think they needed it to be to pick up for an offense that was generally lagging.
Yeah, it was impossible in terms of what the defense was allotted time-wise and field position-wise last year. So I'm going to say it's going to start with talent, and that's no surprise. And I know Michigan State loves to consider itself, or Michigan State fans, or Michigan State as a brand, whatever, that we're getting more with less. We are developing 3 stars. We got this blue-collar mentality, this grit mentality that we can turn non-blue chips into big, shiny NFL prospects. That's all fine. But when Michigan State was winning, when they were getting to Rose Bowls, when they were getting to the playoff, even though the playoff results weren't great, they were bringing in 4, 5, 6, as many as 9 blue chip guys in a single class. I think the 2016 class had 9 blue chips and 11 non-blue chips. That's amazing. Mel Tucker is going to need to recruit his ass off. They need a quarterback and they need depth on defense. Everything else will fill in if you have that. I like the defensive coordinator he hired. I believe that this Michigan State defense will continue to be pretty good and develop NFL caliber players. I think they need to be deeper than they've been these past couple of years, and they need a game changer at quarterback. I don't see it happening soon, but if they can get to a 9-3 point and show promise that they're a quarterback away, maybe they get a transfer. Maybe they get somebody who can be a proof of concept from the MAC or from the Mountain West or somebody with Midwest ties to come in and be that extra seasoning that Michigan State needs to change things up and change up their reputation for recruiting purposes on offense. It's going to take 2 or 3 years at least to sort of shift that perception. So I think it's possible. Michigan State has done it before. This is not an out of nowhere thing if Michigan State's able to get back into late November conversation around a national stage. But I think they've fallen off these past 3 or 4 years in a way that they're going to need 2 or 3 years to fully get to where they need to be roster wise. So
we've had people,
I'm
going to
say
that. Yeah, we've had people write in, Michigan State fans, and say, we love Mark D'Antonio, but we need to change the landscape a bit.
Yeah.
It's starting to get a little bit stale. It happens. It's no disrespect to Mark D'Antonio. He did a great job. But now it is time to move on. I think it's going to take a little bit to get that program rebuilt and retooled in a way that suits Mel Tucker. But
he did a great job until he didn't.
True.
Let's be clear. We can remember what Mark D'Antonio accomplished on the field fondly, but we should remember the full story of just how unwatchable that offense became and just how unwilling he was to fix it and take dramatic steps to fix it out of a sense of loyalty, I suppose. So, I'm excited for Mel Tucker to usher in something new.
All right. We have a question here from Instagram. What's the latest on the Notre Dame, Wisconsin location? So,
what is the latest?
Yeah, I talked about this on a previous show. I got some pushback actually to
to
my comments. I was talking specifically about some rumors that I had read about how that game that Notre Dame and Wisconsin are supposed to play in Lambeau Field on October the 3rd. I want to say it's the first week of October, that there were some rumblings out there that that game might get moved to South Bend. No official announcements, but just rumors. Per our good friend Pete Sampson a couple weeks ago, Notre Dame is exploring moving games in NFL stadiums back on campus. The chairman or CEO of the Packers had made some comment that, you know, no, the game's still going to be here, but he hedged a little bit. And it seems to be one of those deals where they want to have it at Lambeau, if at all possible, but it's sort of an open secret that at this point, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, these schools have to consider contingencies. We talked about USC doing virtual classes. Nobody knows what the hell is going to go down here. It would be foolish to think that they are not considering options to make this game happen, because I'm excited about that game. I'm sure they are too. Notre Dame, Wisconsin, that's an awesome game. Whether or not it's played in Lambeau, whether or not it's played at all, a lot remains to be seen. I do think, though, that there is some truth to the rumors, and that where there is smoke, there is fire. We've probably got some conjecture on both sides of this one as to what happens if Lambeau is not a real option.
Keep it neutral. Keep it regional. Notre Dame, Wisconsin, field from Field of Dreams.
Boom.
I'm just solving problems.
Make it
right
so.
Now. So socially distant. You can't have really stands in any way. Let's make it happen. Between the stocks.
Where are we going next, Dan?
Do you want to stay with Notre Dame? I always like staying with Notre Dame, especially when somebody asks a question like, what game or games, like KT asks from Instagram, will ruin Notre Dame's season in embarrassing fashion and embarrass Irish fans everywhere?
Louisville, second to last week of the year. Next topic.
Notre Dame has a history with Georgia Tech, an embarrassment in Atlanta, I believe between Clemson and Louisville. Yeah,
yes.
Pitt after the double body blow, Stanford, Wisconsin in back-to-back weeks, and then at Pitt, some bumps and bruises perhaps, and then traveling to Annapolis to play Navy, short of South Florida. Navy's the answer to me. Week one, not a lot of time to prepare in the regular way. I think week one, if we get to a week one in which a number of these major matchups and Notre Dame Navy go forward, I think we're going to see some friggin' wacky results tonight. I think it's going to be very wacky. So
I think there's
a lot of opportunity.
I think back to the article that was published on ESPN.com at the beginning of the pandemic, where they talk through what might the season look like. And one of the comments was from Lincoln Riley. And he said, look, it may not look a whole lot different to the average viewer at home, but to a coach, it's going to look sloppy.
Yeah.
It's going to look sloppy.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to look like a bunch of athletes taking over and maybe not playing the cleanest brand of football. And that week one could be a fun week to bet on all underdogs.
I would love to. I would love to bet on crazy unders, underdogs, games being canceled, games going forward. There's going to be a lot to bet on if that's the sort of thing you're into. 1984 wants to know, can Wisconsin finally beat Ohio State? It's been 10 years. I believe that happened. Maybe you can look this up while I'm saying this. I believe that was the same weekend we met in Nebraska.
Oh, wow.
Because it was 2010 that we met in person for the first time. I believe Wisconsin-Ohio State with the Badgers coming out on top was that same weekend. I could be mistaken. That was a Nebraska-Texas game. It was low scoring and pretty ugly. That's my guess. Can Wisconsin finally beat Ohio State? Well, Ohio State has two new coordinators. They've got a lot of new faces on defense, full-time starter-wise. I think Wisconsin, and I hope you're going to interpret this correctly for the first time, I think they've got problems.
Yeah?
I think they have a problem in terms of offensive skill that Ohio State should be worried about. I don't think they have game breakers, especially with Jonathan Taylor moving on. I know Wisconsin always replaces it. I know there are obvious replacements and they should have a good offensive line, but I think it kind of doomed them in the Rose Bowl, where a team as talented as Oregon that has flaws that Ohio State doesn't. A team as talented as Oregon, you do need some obvious problems in a good way on your roster. And I don't see Wisconsin's offensive depth chart right now having obvious game breakers.
By the way, that was the same weekend that we met in Nebraska.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
I just remembered. It was Terrell Pryor.
Saturday, October the 16th, 2010. First time you and I ever met.
See? Bring it all back together. What are your thoughts? Is Wisconsin, because they keep meeting in the Big Ten championship game, it seems. Is there any reason for you, because they started out so well last year, that defense was so good for so long last year, and they hung with Ohio State in the regular season reasonably well until they didn't. Any reason for increased Wisconsin confidence if they've figured out the Buckeyes?
No, I don't have increased confidence.
Okay.
No. I think one of the things that we talked about with Ohio State last year was the coaching change from Urban Meyer to Ryan Day and how that might facilitate an opening for Michigan.
If it
was going to be last year, right? Coaching changes, we said there, it's a coin flip. We don't know. It wasn't much of a coin flip, was it?
Well, J.K. Dobbins is no longer wearing scarlet and gray.
No, he's not.
That's a reason. I mean, if we are going to start listing out reasons why Wisconsin has Ohio State's number this year, is the Dobbins absence.
And Ohio State loses some folks. Let's not kid ourselves here. But yeah, we didn't see that lapse when Ryan Day took over. We're certainly not going to see that lapse this year, I don't think. And maybe it could happen after Justin Fields leaves after the 2020 campaign, whatever that looks like. But they're going to have to catch him in a year like that, where Ohio State has more of a fatal flaw. And Wisconsin, a team that's been very solid over the last 5 to 10 years, been very good. They're going to need to retain that defense and I think get a little bit more out of the quarterback position if they want to have a puncher's chance.
And Ohio State still has, and it's not J.K. Dobbins level excitement, Chris Olave.
No, that's right. I love that name.
Yeah, great name. Only One Field from Instagram wants to know, Chase Garbers, undefeated as a full-time starter last year. I don't think you can read Chase Garbers' name with like, Cal went 7-0 when he played the entire game. So Chase Garbers, Jake Bentley, new presumed starter at Utah, Tyler Shuck, new presumed starter at Oregon, or Washington's quarterback room. Who do you prefer, both, I guess, in a vacuum and given their situations?
I am goo-goo for Garbers, baby.
Oh, I hate this already.
Give me that healthy okay. Chase Garbers. He's my okay. boy.
Doesn't have a lot to throw to. New offensive coordinator, which is going to be a challenge, but so does Tyler Shuck. So does Washington and John Donovan, your guy. Hmm. I would order this Garbers, Shuck, Washington quarterbacks, Jake Bentley in a vacuum. Situationally, I think Tyler Shuck with Joe Moorhead and what they return skill-wise, I think is in the best situation.
I would put Garbers first.
That's my answer.
And Washington last because of John Donovan.
We could have double Garbers. You could be goo-goo for multiple Garbers for the Garber group. For Ethan Garbers wins the job at Washington. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Where are we going next here?
Jeffries from Instagram wants to know, will Felipe Franks be an impact transfer for Arkansas? I'm going to say no, I'm willing to listen to you.
What is your definition of impact?
Oh, man. Felipe Franks has been the difference as Arkansas clinches bowl eligibility.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Arkansas was bad last year. How about this?
Yeah.
Relative to what they had at quarterback last year, anyone is impact.
Well, impact means making a difference, not necessarily just better, but are they good enough to lift them out from underwater? That's an impact.
he's going to be better than what they had. I don't know. He's going to be better. They were very young last year. They were very bad last year, frankly. And if he can give them more consistency in the pass game, they had a young receiving core last year. If he can get them more consistency in the pass game, that will be a quantum leap forward. So does that qualify as quote unquote impact? I don't know. I'm not going to put any kind of real money on Arkansas making a bowl game. But can Felipe Franks have a good year? Sure.
So you're saying he lands the plane. It's bumpy. It's a close call, but he lands the plane. Yeah,
I also don't understand the move for Felipe Franks to leave Florida. That one, right. That one's goofy to me. I know he got hurt and Kyle Trask took over, but I don't know. To go in, to learn a new system now, it's what, Kendall Briles at Arkansas? Yeah,
not a lot of time.
Not a lot of time. Maybe that will produce some results that are interesting, but it depends on your definition of impact, I suppose.
I'm not there. I'm just not there. And it's not a Felipe Franks reason. Just going to take more than a guy, even if he plays quarterback.
Give me two more.
In a single year.
Give me two more college football questions before we get to 4th of July.
All right. I'm going to stick with your wheelhouse. Give me a non-new coordinator reason Sean Clifford will take the next step, Penn State. So you're not allowed to talk about Kirk Sciarca, the new offensive coordinator who came in from Minnesota. A non-new system, new coordinator reason, Sean Clifford becomes pretty good.
That is an impossible question to answer.
Disagree. Continue, though.
I do not have that feeling about Sean Clifford. I'm not going to pretend that I am feeling the vapors for him taking this step forward. I was suspect on him a year ago, especially against better teams. If you look at his stat line, it was somewhat underwhelming. His receiving core last year had more options. Doesn't mean someone couldn't develop, but count me among the skeptics who don't necessarily think Jahan Dotson is going to become the new KJ Hamler. If I can't use the coordinator, I guess the only thing that I would lean on is that it's another year in the system. Provided he can stay healthy, he's got a backfield that he can lean on. One of the better running back rooms in the country. And that will take some of the pressure off him.
Okay. So the case is, and the way you speak, you've clearly never played basketball with four other dudes who are great. And you were just not screwing things up. You were just making entry passes, setting screens, and enjoying some W's. I have been a facilitator, a team player, a total glue guy in pickup basketball and rec league basketball to know that it is possible, even playing quarterback at a major place like Penn State, to just sort of lean on the situation and end up successful. Now, obviously, he's going to be playing for Kirk Sciarca and the new offense that Kirk Sciarca has instituted that he had a lot of success with at Minnesota. But you hit on the reasons. If Penn State can run the ball, throwing the ball becomes easier. Play action becomes easier. Linebackers suck in because of, what is it, expect to be what, Journey Brown and Noah Cain?
There's like those, eight guys. Yeah, there's
yeah,
like eight guys.
I mean, they've recruited like 7, 8, 9 blue chip receivers these past couple years. There's going to be somebody that steps up. James Franklin recruits well. So the idea that they can run the ball, that the idea that they have a threat in the middle and Pat Freiermuth, the idea that their offensive line continues to improve and is a totally respectable unit now. He is set up for success, especially since the defense should also be good. He will have field position. He will have tired defenses because their own defense, in that alley-oop way I like to talk about, will wear out or will get offenses off the field quickly, leaving defenses on the field a lot. Sean Clifford is set up for success. And so I think he's starting out on second base. That's a whole other sport analogy, Ty. So that's the reason why. He's in a good situation to succeed.
All right.
That's it. That's the case. That's the case. That's all I have. All right. Quickly, are you intrigued by Ole Miss Baylor week one? Two new coaches, Dave Aranda, Lane Kiffin?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm intrigued. We actually had another question about who are some of the early season upset candidates?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which teams are more susceptible to an early season upset?
LSU's in that category. Michigan's probably in that category. And I think Baylor's in that category for some of the same reasons I pointed out before. They lost a lot. A lot of the production walks out the door. And new coach, not as much ability to prep given circumstances. Not to say that Ole Miss is in that different of a situation with a new coach of their own, but they do have a difference maker at quarterback who I think Lane Kiffin's going to have a lot of fun with. So not knowing fully what Baylor is going to be this year or what Ole Miss is going to be this year, I'm intrigued by that game as sort of a sleeper upset play.
All right, since we spent so much time talking about SEC quarterbacks, we've talked about Kyle Trask, Jarrett Garantano, JT Daniels, Jamie Newman, Felipe Franks, Kellen Mond. I'm just going to ask you about Miles Brennan because Coach O is Lord from Reddit says, asks, says, whatever. Say something nice about Miles Brennan, who has felt like he's been in Baton Rouge for 6 or 7 years, but apparently hasn't. Give me something nice about Miles Brennan, who we've really only seen in garbage time.
Great head of hair. It's like Ronnie Bass in Remember the Titans, Dan. Really strong head of hair.
My first impression upon looking at him is that he looks like he also played for the Hawks with Adam from Mighty Ducks.
Adam also Banks on Triple D.
Adam Banks. He looks like an Adam Banks teammate in the who was fooled by the flying V. Miles Brennan looks like he had trouble putting one past Goldberg.
Miles Brennan was a composite four-star recruit out of Mississippi. Obviously didn't get much time ahead of Joe Burrow, but he came in with a lot of acclaim. I think given what we know of him, there's reason to be optimistic, but we just haven't seen enough of him. Of what I've read, I think people are excited about what he could bring to the equation, but I have a hard time just given the fact that LSU does lose a lot. They lose a lot on the line. They lose, you know, they're
arguably the most versatile running back in the nation.
Versatile running back. Yeah. They lose Justin Jefferson to the league. So there's a lot around him that is also in flux. And so I'm hesitant to go too far because of that.
All right, I'm going to say something nice about Miles Brennan. He's in a great situation where he's not going to be asked to do quite as much as Joe Burrow was last year because that's an impossibility. He maybe had the best quarterback season of all time in the sport last year. He's throwing to the Blitnikoff Award winner and Ja'Marr Chase. He has Terrace Marshall back. The defense will give him an opportunity with Bo Pelini. I expect that to be a very, very good defense. And Miles Brennan, while I don't see being top three quarterback potentially in the SEC, happy to be wrong. He seems like he is a guy. Not good, not bad. He just seems like a guy in the limited amount of time I've seen him play, a little bit more hesitant, I think, than Joe Burrow, but he wasn't empowered last year. So I think he'll be fine. I think he will be fine. I think he could have a season where he throws 24 touchdowns to 8 or 9 picks if we get a full season. And that's pretty good, but I don't think he's going to be dominant.
I don't think what you got out of Joe Burrow was once in a generation. And it's not likely he's going to repeat that. Also, Joe Brady left. And look, I mean, he was only there for a short period of time. But what's the offense look like now? Is it going to look the same as before? Can it look the same as before? I don't want to go too far with Miles Brennan because I feel like there are a lot of unknowns here.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. I'm not as pessimistic as some. I'm not as optimistic as some. I think they'll be fine.
Where are we going next?
You want to do 4th of July? You want to just get into Independence Day?
So this concludes the football portion of this show. Thank you so much for downloading. We're going to talk about some July 4th stuff. Do you have the issue out there in Southern California with people lighting off fireworks at all hours of the day?
We do. I'm staying a little bit removed from dense populace, but I even still hear fireworks, and I'm not fully sure why. I know there are lots of theories as to why firework explosions have increased these past few weeks, but yes, I do hear them.
Let me tell you, the dog does not love it, and it's not optimal as a pet owner.
Yeah.
I wish they'd stop doing it, but it is Independence Day weekend, so if you are going to be doing that, make sure you're taking proper safety precautions, not just wearing the mask, but
you know, don't blow your hand off or anything crazy. Let's get to that hot dog question.
All right. First of all, I need to know a couple things. We have a few questions that could potentially involve hot dogs.
Okay.
Are you a hot dog fan? Not necessarily consumer consistently, but do you enjoy a good hot dog?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I want to know. When, I mean, I don't know how often you eat hot dogs. I eat them not super frequently. Maybe when I go to a baseball game, or maybe when I go to somebody's house that they're grilling and there's dogs and burgers, and I want some variety to my life. But you enjoy a hot dog.
I do.
You have hot dog thoughts.
I don't eat them all that often, but
okay.
Usually it's after the ninth hole on the golf course.
Okay.
Early tee time.
Keep you going.
Starving. Need some extra energy to get through that back nine. We hit the clubhouse and take down a dog or two.
Okay, so David wants to know how many hot dogs should I eat? And he also wants to know the perfect hot dog toppings. Now, of course, this is a fully subjective question, a fully subjective two-part question. But how many hot dogs, if you are in a hot dog mood, if I invited you over to Casa de Rubenstein, and we're like, we're making dogs and only dogs, and it happens to overlap with your mood of being just craving dogs, Ty.
Right, right.
How many will you put away if you are just looking for satisfaction? Not necessarily to impress anybody, not necessarily to seem polite. You are not stepping on anybody's toes. You can have as many dogs as you'd like. How many would please you?
I'd probably go three.
Okay. Are you changing up toppings to have different experiences on dogs?
I think I'm staying consistent, Dan.
Walk me through your toppings if we do have a full layout.
Well, I do the ketchup.
That's okay.
I mean, do the ketchup.
Not my thing.
And I know that makes me a bit of a pariah on this show, but...
Just ketchup or ketchup mustard, ketchup onions, sauerkraut, relish, chili?
I'll do ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do mustard. I will do chili. If it's available. I'm not saying I'm going to do
all on the
these.
Same dog.
No, not all on the same dog, but I'm just saying the toppings that I will mix and match. I'll do the onions.
I want to know what your dog looks like tonight with all of these options laid out there.
Yeah, I would probably mix it up a little bit. So I would probably go.
So you would mix it up.
I would. I would go ketchup and onions on one of them. I'd go chili on another.
Straight then, chili.
I'll do the straight chili, yeah.
Okay, and no, nothing else with the chili.
No.
No mustard or onions in addition. Okay, continue.
Don't think. That's a little aggressive, don't you think?
No. Continue, though.
That's very aggressive. And then for the third, that's a bit of a wild card. Maybe anything I didn't get on the first two, you know, passes.
All right, so I would probably do something similar minus the ketchup. I would probably do two more conservative dogs. So we're talking mustard and onions only, and maybe mustard, onions, and chopped pickles. Not relish, chopped pickles. My third dog, I'm going all out, especially if I have a good chili available to me. There's a local place called Tommy's that really does it well. I will take a slice of American cheese. I will rip it in half diagonally.
Good.
So I have two triangles.
Yep.
I will wrap it under the dog to get a little melting action. So it's alongside perhaps a steamed or grilled bun, and then it's underneath the dog itself. So we're getting good.
A dog on a blanket of American cheese.
Yeah, I'm getting a quality undermelt here.
Yeah.
And then atop the dog, mustard and onions, atop that, some chili.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's my chili cheese dog, which is, I wanna say that's if Los Angeles, if LA or Southern California has a distinct dog, it's probably a chili cheese dog. So that's what I'm going with dog-wise. Going beyond three, I know I'll regret it.
What's the most you've ever eaten in one sitting? How many hot dogs have you eaten in one sitting?
I've probably done four dogs. I can't imagine I've ever done more than four dogs in a sitting.
I've done five Yakko dogs before.
How big are they compared to other dogs?
They're
average.
About maybe a little bit below average. Yeah. They're about normal size.
I'm not talking about plump dogs here, Ty. I'm talking about your standard Boar's Head, Heber National, ballpark, whatever, a standard dog girth, for lack of a better term.
I've done nothing five plump. Yakko dogs before. Not a sponsor, Yakko's.
Okay. I think that covers that. Because Michael also asked hot dog or chili cheese dog. My answer is both. My answer is
sure. I'll do chili cheese.
Follow
dog.
Your heart.
Yeah.
Andrew wants to know most underrated side dish for a 4th of July cookout. So Ty, you can't answer potato salad.
No.
You can't answer baked beans. You can't answer coleslaw. You can't answer corn on the cob.
Mm.
I'm going to need something a little off the beaten path that if you were throwing a party, you'd be like, you know what? I'm going to make this. And I'm going to throw everybody for a knuckleball. Or I'm going to a party. Oh, interesting. It'd be really cool if they had why. What's your answer?
I need to think about that. I didn't prep for this portion of the show.
I have a couple of answers.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I've mentioned my corn salad. By mine, I mean a restaurant in Atlanta called Bee's Cracklin'. The corn salad before is amazing. It's a black bean, corn, avocado, cilantro, jalapeno salad. It's great. Tweet us if you want the recipe. Happy to send it along. My other answer is just a big old pile of caramelized onions.
Hmm.
If you saw a big bowl of deeply caramelized onions with just a ladle or some tongs, I'm just saying, throw it on your plate. That's high quality, according to me.
I'm thinking like some kind of dip.
Mm-hmm.
Like a taco salad kind of dip. I don't know. That's okay. Always my answer when we have these questions. I'm so overmatched when it comes to these food questions.
Now you just gotta give it some thought.
I do give it thought. I don't have answers. I guess the answer would be some sort of taco salad dip. I don't know.
How do you feel about hot potato salad as compared to cold potato salad?
I think it's cold.
German potato salad is a warmer one.
I prefer it cold as well.
Yeah,
I need it cold. I prefer it on the cold side. I have had it warm, but I prefer cold.
I would also say just grill up a ton of vegetables. Because you can season them however you want. You can make them spicy, you can make them salty, all of the above, whatever. I think that's an underrated side. Just a big old bowl of roasted vegetables. You can throw it on burgers, you can throw it on dogs, you can have it solo. I think that's a good answer.
What's our next question?
Will the solid toddler be attending any form of 4th of July celebration / does he have ear protection?
Mm.
Solid toddler's got a pretty early bedtime. He's only 17 months old. So no, we will not be attending anything. But we generally have been able to see fireworks from where we are out here. So if there are early fireworks while it's still light out, he will be encouraged to watch them. We will hold them or bring them outside, whatever. But no, I don't think we're going to be going to like a socially distant park celebration or anything like that. So we'll just hope for something early. But no ear protection. It's far enough away that I think we should be fine.
Two more questions.
How about this? You can answer this however you like, because there's no underrated, overrated, secret, anything like that. What's your favorite 4th of July dish? Sugar Shane from Instagram wants to know.
Sugar Shane. What a name.
Yeah. Give me anything. And listen, it doesn't have to be typical. It's just specific to you.
I am boring when it comes to my food.
Hold on. If you're editing this, or if our friend Ryan is editing this, please isolate that. I am boring.
I am, though. I'm boring. And there is part of me that enjoys the experience of a July 4th cookout more so than what the sophistication level is of the food I'm eating.
Okay.
If I'm at a picnic, or if I am holding the picnic, and somebody comes to me with a perfectly cooked backyard burger, cheeseburger.
Great answer.
Mm-hmm. With a corn of cob on the grill.
A corn of cob.
Maybe with some of that potato salad. Some potato chips. Let's go nuts with the taters.
Yeah, starch madness.
I don't need much, but July 4th is like one of my favorite holidays. In normal circumstances, where people can get together and have picnics and do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoy that experience a lot.
Give me a blueberry crumble.
Oh, geez.
Give me a blueberry crumble. I love a blueberry crumble. It feels like summer. Blueberries are in season. I double the crumble from a recipe I found. It's perfect. It's perfect. It really is something to look forward to while you're eating grilled meats and vegetables, whatever your thing is. Blueberry crumble and 4th of July. It's just as good as it gets.
You know how much hell I'm going to catch for saying that I like cheeseburgers as part of my answer.
Well, walk me through your burger. Preference,
medium
vegetable
well,
preference, sauce.
Medium well. I'd like to have a full slice of onion on the top. Maybe
great.
Some lettuce, maybe some tomato.
Sounds amazing to me.
Ketchup, mustard.
I think you need a quality burger sauce that can't involve ketchup and mustard. That's a great answer, Ty. I'm not going to disparage that answer at all. But blueberry crumble. Oh, I love
blueberry crumble. Okay.
Well, look.
What are you doing? Just tell me what you're doing for 4th of July.
I don't know.
Are you and the missus just having a cookout? Are you distant from neighbors, block party, anything safe? You don't have plans yet?
No, we've been distant from everything for 3 months now.
Yeah.
As I'm sure a lot of folks listening to this show are.
Yeah.
And
are there fireworks in your neighborhood?
Are you kidding me? I live in Eastern Pennsylvania. There's fireworks even when it's not July.
Okay.
It's an interesting time for all of us. I think we're used to getting together with friends and family, and that's not going to be as much an option this year. And
right.
Specifically for those of you who are out there who work in corporate America or
yeah.
somewhere in America, the weeks kind of run together into the weekends. So you get to this point in time, it's like, what are we supposed to do? What are we looking forward to? Mm-hmm. I'm just looking forward to spending some time with my wife and pup and maybe cooking out on the grill, enjoying some of the summer sun, and hopefully taking another step closer to college football season. We need a season. For our purposes here, it would be helpful.
Yeah. Will you mess around with a s'more? You have a fire pit back there?
We do have a fire pit. It's rusted out right now. I need to get a new one.
Okay. Ty, I think you got a grill. I think you got to be outside. It doesn't matter if you're with 30 people or with two. You got to be outside. You got to put food over fire, and you got to just take a second. Throw a towel on the lawn. Look up at the night sky. I think that's bare minimum. So I think you're doing it right.
What are you doing?
Backyard grilling. Enjoy some outside time. Maybe I'll have a rare cold beer. Really get after it. Take my blueberry crumble out of the oven. I don't know. Grill meat, grill vegetables, bake, enjoy some fresh air.
All right.
It's pretty good. That's all I have.
Well, Daniel, have a good 4th. That goes to everyone out there listening to the show. Thank you so much for downloading. As we said at the top of last show, if you want to go on out and give us a 5-star review, that would be helpful. We'd appreciate it. In the meantime, if you are out and about socially distancing and being safe, please do tell your friends to listen to our show. At a minimum, go out there and follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. And if you're really bored, maybe go out and check out the old Reddit at solidverbal.reddit.com. We've got a YouTube channel. We're going to start posting a little bit more to that over the next few days, maybe by the time we drop our next show. So a lot of exciting things happening as we eagerly await news on the status of the 2020 college football season. As news breaks, tune back in. We will do our best to try and cover that as best we can. But in the meantime, Dan, I wish you, I wish yours, I wish everybody out there a very happy and healthy July 4th weekend. And by all means, stay solid.
Peace.